Минута два или второго разрешения.
Now, what's particularly peculiar about this minhag is if you look in the Gemara, no mention of it in the Gemara, not the Bavli, not the Rishonim, there's no Medrash that it's based on. Where did it come from? The answer is that we find it really from the Tshuva Sarivosh, whether he is the one that initiated or other Gedolim just before him. Sarivosh was a Talmud of the Ran, so we're dealing at the beginning of the 14th century. And we Ashkenazic Jews, European anti-Semitism, we understand well. But Arab anti-Semitism or anti-Jewish things, historically, we don't have much knowledge of. It's not an us sphere. And the Jews did not live comfortably in the Arab world. I think, though, that the European anti-Semites surpassed them in their violence towards Jews. That we don't, they had the Crusades, Chmelnytsky, the Hitler Yimach Shemam, and varied other things of significance, but just in the larger scheme of the other evil that took place, they pale in comparison. The Cantonists, I think, took between 40 and 60,000 Jewish children in the 19th century. But in the whole scale of Jewish suffering, as significant as it is, but it still pales in comparison. It doesn't seize prominence. But the Arab world had its own fundamentalism, its own intolerance towards the Jews, its own pogroms against the Jews. And the Rivosh tells us that by his time already, the beginning of the 14th century, we're dealing with North Africa, that the Jew could no longer light his menorah outside the house. Apparently it couldn't even be visible outside the house. This was something which had to be done behind closed doors. And as such, the Rishonim of that time became concerned that we're lacking in the first fundamental Pesumanisa of Hanukkah. Purim, the Pesumanisa, we come together in the Beis HaKnesses, we read the Megillah, that's the Pesumanisa. The Pesumanisa of Hanukkah was to light a menorah, seen by passers-by outdoors, and thereby to be Mefarsim the Nes. If we're going to disappear behind closed doors, and this is not the first time in history that we disappeared behind closed doors, as we're going to see. The Gemara already dealt with that possibility. But I think what changed at this time is the realization that it was not going to quickly change back. That this was going to be, for the foreseeable future, a way of life.
It implies that at the beginning they were safe, but if it's Shana Acher, the next year, they were still under Greek rule, it was still considered safe to practice at that point?
Well, I guess the Jews that were under Greek rule practiced, the ones that were still under. The story, I think, to totally defeat Antiochus, I took somewhere about 50 years. It did not take place in the short term at all. So I presume that those Jews that lived in those parts, which were still under the oppression of Antiochus, did not celebrate Hanukkah. As Matisyahu expanded outward from Yerushalayim, so more and more areas, joined in the celebration. So the Gemara, in the time of the Rishonim, apparently, they realized this was going to be quite permanent, that they were quite long range, that they would not have the possibility of pursuing these. So we'll come back to that and compare it to the Gemara in a moment. So the Rivosh tells us that they instituted the public lighting in shul, so there should be a measure of public pursumanisa. Now, this is a surprising chiddush. The Chacham Tzvi, a very interesting figure, the Chacham Tzvi was an Ashkenazi, but he was a Chacham because he was the Rav of Amsterdam. The Yaivitz, who lived in Germany, was his son. So he in his tshuva says he does not understand this practice, because part and parcel of the practice, this practice, and it's a furish in the Beis Yosef, is the recitation of the brachos. That's an integral part of the Pesu Menisa. According to, there's a machlokus of Sephardic and Ashkenazic Rishonim, Tosfos Yudalet Amud Aleph, in Megillah, in brachos it should be, where the Rabbeinu Tam says that we make a brach on a minuk, and that's why that's the Ashkenazic justification that we recite the bracha when we say the half halal on Rosh Chodesh, even though it's a minhag. The Sfardim, in fact, do not make a bracha in such a case, b'yichidus. They hold there's a din only, but only b'tzibur, not b'yichidus. But b'yichidus, they don't recite a bracha. Why? Because it's a minhag ba'alma. A minhag, the Sfardim hold, you don't recite a bracha. So what should come out then is that according to the Sfardim, there should have been no basis for the recitation of the bracha, because this was a minhag. So somehow in the din of Pesumei Nisa allowed for this to take place. I believe that there are more recent tshuvas that have addressed the Chacham Tzvi, but the Chacham Tzvi leaves it as a pella. He doesn't understand what happened, how it happened. But the Sfardish Rishonim, circa the beginning of the 14th century, introduced this practice as Arab fundamentalism rose. Subsequently, Ashkenazic Rishonim, apparently, I would think subsequently, adopted the same practice for similar reasons. We don't know exactly at what point the Ashkenazi world reached the same level of intolerance. But by the Ramos 16th century cracker, the Ramos wrote, there were three possibilities if we'd light the Megillah, the Mezuzah, the Chanukiah, the Chanukah Menorah. Outside the house, next to the, opposite the Mezuzah. Inside the house, in the doorway, where it was visible from the street, but still within the house. And finally, tucked away behind closed doors as a private celebration. There are more than one place in the Shulchan Aruch writes that Onoshu Madlikim Vifnim Mamish, and as he spells out of the Darkei Moshe on the Torah, means that all Chanukiyot are not visible in the street at all. They're tucked away where nobody can see them from outside. In two places, the Ramo says that. So that's because the intolerance in Krakow, now it's interesting, he didn't live in a village, the Ramo. In a village, you expect it more, there's an intolerance. There's a few Jews, you know. Bigger cities usually are a little bit looser. And Avraham Pekin, he lived in Krakow, in a major city, and it still was not doable to leave the menorah outside. So that's where his minhag came from. And this was a public Pesumei Nisa. It's the Inyan of the Pesumei Nisa. We understand the Pesu Menisa the following. We are not out to teach. It's not a teachable moment. We're not out to teach others who don't believe in the Ness or in the Yont of what this is about. That's not our purpose. We are preaching to the choir. But what's the point? There are things in life that are significant enough that we should draw lessons from them and dwell upon them. And there were a lot of things in life that were significant at the moment, but they're timely and not timeless. And even some of the things that are timely, only timely in a very silly or insignificant fashion, not to use the word silly, but insignificant. You know, in childhood, there are a lot of things that take place. They're very interesting and fascinating at the time. But they ultimately don't bear any message for life. You know, the games, the things that happen in childhood. There are things that happen, personalities that we meet, that leave an impression. We learn lessons from them. Those are things that are worth repeating. When we talk about Pesumei Nisa, we're saying that this Ness, something happened of significance that's worth emphasizing, that's worth focusing upon. And by all of us shouting it out in front of each house, we are making a statement, a collective statement, that this is important to us. It's important to focus upon it. And that may bring the individual to focus on the Rabbeinu Shlomo's Hashgacha. That's l'chor, the Inyan of the Pesumei Nisa. So to do it publicly, where the whole Rabbim joins together to state, to make a statement of emphasis of this, is something which is very important. There's an interesting parallel with IT. The Gemara in Arvei Pesachim questions why, as we do, we recite Kiddush Friday night before Aleinu. So the Gemara cites a machloikus Rav and Shmuel if you need kiddush b'mokum suda or not. So Rav sheet is you don't need kiddush b'mokum suda. So the Gemara says according to Rav, so it's poshut why we make kiddush, the same that we make Abdullah Motzi Shabbos. Whoever is not going to recite kiddush at home, whatever is going someplace else, it's inconvenient, he can't drink the wine, whatever the 100 reasons may be. Listen, he'll listen in shul and he's yaitza kiddush. Now he has to worry about suda Shabbos, but kiddush is taken care of. But the Gemara says, but according to Shmuel, who says, "Ain kiddush elav mokum suda," which is the way we paskin. So why is it that we recite the kiddush in shul? So the Gemara says, "Lafuki rabim yidei chavosim," to be mitzi the rabim, the guests, there were orchim. It said, "Lafuki orchim yidei chavosim." There were guests that had stayed in the guest quarters of the shul, and they needed to hear kiddush. So Tosa says they didn't actually stay in the shul itself. They stayed in the room next to the shul because but the Knesset doesn't allow it. They would not allow them to eat in shul. Tosa says in more than one place in Shas. So it was a room next to the shul. So did they hear kiddush in shul? Then go to the next room with a shayla and rishayim for yitzei lemaisa kiddush b'mokum suda like that, or did they go to that room in the first place and they actually listened while they were in that room? And this was at the end of the tefillah. But what's puzzling is, if this is a matter for the Orchim and not for the Rabbim, then why did they make it in Shul? After davening, they should have sent the Shamas to the guest house, and the Shamas should have made Kiddush for them, if that's what they wanted, and that's all. Why was it part of the Beis HaKnesses? And you see, the whole Rabbim was there, because the Gemara says, according to Rav, anyone that wanted was Yotzi with it. So everybody was there. So why did they do it in the presence of everyone? Tell everybody to go home. And the chazan will go and sing kiddush for a few people that are in the guest house. This always troubled me in this sugya. Like the Gemara does not seem, the Gemara's question, the Gemara's answer doesn't seem really to answer the question. The question is, what's the function of kiddush? But you need to ask yourself part of that question, why are you doing it in the middle of shul, in the middle of davening, if it has nothing to do with the people in shul? I mean, that also should be part of the question. And that the Gemara doesn't answer. Which Shmuel's answer. So I thought that pshat in the Gemara is the following, that they wouldn't have instituted it unless the fact was a real keel. If they were not guests, they wouldn't have instituted it. But once they instituted it, they had a second kavanah too. And that second kavanah was that we should be mekadesh Shabbos barabim. The rabbim, there should be a kiddush barabim of Shabbos. Not only be yichidus in the house, but barabim, we should be mekadesh Shabbos. So Baruch Hashem zachisi, that someone found it in the Chubas of the Ozarua. The Ozarua learns this Pshat of the Gemara. At least in one of the two Pshatim that he has, but at least the one Mahalach of the Ozarua in the Chubas is to learn this Pshat of the Gemara.
I'd have dull that you wouldn't ask the same question, but then it's obvious you'll be
able to sing. You don't need B'mokum Suda. So anyone in the Shul that wants to can be Yaitse. Let's say I have to go to the airport and I don't have time to go home. Let's say I'm a single guy, I don't have anyone at home. All the svaros, there are people that are yotze every week in the shul.
By Havdalah, though, as opposed to Kiddush, would the din be that if nobody was going to be yotze, we still were koveyed as part of the davening?
No, I don't think so. And especially if we don't hold like the Rambam, that Havdalah is not deraisa, then it certainly would be poshut. But anyhow, the guy that makes it is certainly yotze. So at least he's yotze. Yeah, that's why I only let single people.
Because the minute we always say is by a shul, even if there's no guests, we make kiddush no matter what.
Because that's it, because there was a takana, which was that it should be a chelik of the tefillah, that we should be mekadesh. They wouldn't have made it if it hadn't been that there was a function, but they made a takana.
Okay, so by Havdalah, if you had 10 people and everybody was going home, so
you wouldn't have to do it. I don't think, according to the Rambam, there might be an Indian to do it, because the Rambam holds that Havdalah is a deraisa dikadin. It's a part of Zachros Yom HaShabbos Lekacho. So according to the Rambam, which if you followed with the Ozeru into the Rambam, there would be a reason to do it even by Havdalah. So therefore, the same way there's a din of the Kiddush of Shabbos, Chor Havdalah is also a chelik of the Kiddush of Shabbos, according to the Rambam. It's the way to be Mavdum and Kodesh Tachod is also it's the same Indian as Kiddush. Yeah.
Isn't there an opinion that we compare the candle lighting in Shul to the same idea that the Mekiddush in Shul? Isn't that how that evolved?
It didn't evolve from that, no. It's parallel, but it did not evolve from it. It evolved from, as the Rav Osh says, that does not come from that. The Rav Osh does not cite that, as
there
I recall.
Are other opinions,
what?
There are other opinions that do.
I haven't seen it. To me, they are parallel. You mean that they lit the menorah for that reason? And sure. It's not what the Rav Osh is the source, and the Rav Osh, that's what the Shulchan Aruch cites, and the Rav Osh does not say that that's the reason for it. I'll call upon him this is miyuchad for a Beis HaKnesses, this minhag. It has no shaychus with anything else. It doesn't have a shaychus with Hanukkah parties, it has no shaychus with public the park, and it has no shaychus with Columbus Circle.
Is it miyuchad to tefillah? I know, my son told me in Chavetz Chaim, they give a clock.
No, it's not miyuchad to the tefillah. No, it has nothing to do with the tefillah. It's where the Rabbim comes together to the place to, like, if you're not mispalo there, I don't know if there's such a din. In other words, in a pure base medrash, I don't know if you lit. In European societies, they had, interestingly, they had a base of Knesset and a base of medrash in every city, which were two totally separate enterprises. And historically, what happened, it's interesting that the Bote Knesios remained Ashkenaz, and the Hasidim took hold of the Bote Midrashim. And that's what the Nusach Sfard and Yonim were in the Bote Midrashim. I believe the reason was because in those areas, the Bote Midrashim were not very much used, unfortunately. I think that's the pshat. So, in other words, in the Litta, they weren't taking over the Bote Midrashim. They would have chased them out. You know, that's what I think that the pshat is, that the shuls were heavily used and the Bote Midrashim much, much less used, unfortunately. In Ramayla, this was right for anyone, then they grabbed them. That's what I think is the pshat. Now, in the Gemara, gave three possibilities of where to light the menorah. Gemara said, if you lived in the first floor, so you lit outside your house. In the Shiloh, do you light it mean, does it mean at the Pesach of the Chotzer, or the Pesach of the Bias? There are steerers, there are two Rashis, one way and two Rashis the other way. Tosis, I think, is partial to lighting up Pesach HaChotzer, because that's most visible from the Rosh Hashanah, but I'm all up with Miyash of Rashi, the steerers of Rashi. But that's not for now. That's not our ASIC. It's not our ASIC. Oh. So that's one part. What happens if you lived in the second floor? So you didn't really have a doorway on the first floor. You came, I guess, in through the Balabais' door and you went up to the second floor, but you didn't have your own door on the first floor. So then he lit it b'chalayim, he lit it in the window. It's a shasakono. Then it's enough to put it on your table and light there. What did tzakona mean? It's clear the Rishonim did not learn tzakona. It meant tzakonas nefoshes. It could have been a chiddush. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to tell me that you don't light it in the chalon. That certainly, I don't need the Gemara to tell me that. But to tell me that I should light it on the table is an inyan. Maybe mokum b'koch nefesh, you can't do the mitzvah. So that maybe there would be a chiddush, but the Rishonim did not seem to learn that. The Gemara says, "What was shasakono? He also chavrei the bubble. I believe the chavrei are the Zoroastrians. I believe, and they were religious fundamentalists and extremely intolerant. And when one of their festivals occurred, so one of the laws of their religion was that the only place you were allowed to light light of any type was in their house of worship." In a private venue, you were not allowed to light a candle. So, and if they caught you, they sent the police around. They didn't kill you, they beat you up, though, if you did it. So this is, B'chiyos, Chavri the Bobel, Chazal said that this was became a very, very intolerable situation to live under, you know, these fundamentalists. So, Menichu al Shechonu V'dayu. But I presume, though, that in the time of the Gemara, it was not an every year occurrence. In other words, similarly, if you have different calendars, so the festivals don't overlap from one calendar to the next, except sporadically. So even in other words, this year, maybe the Chavri had that festival on Hanukkah. You know, maybe the next time they'll have it is 20 years from now, it'll coincide with Hanukkah. So it did not seem from the Gemara that this was an ongoing issue, like a day in, day out issue, which wasn't going away. You know, sometimes the calendars overlapped and we had to be careful. All the years you could light outside and it was fine. That's what I imagined is the pshat. I don't think that they always had a yontif when we had a holiday, when we had a yontif of Hanukkah. So that would be the reason that in the time of the Gemara they did not institute lighting in the Beis HaKnesses. Because, you know, next year you light outside. You know, this year we have to duck for a day or two, whatever it is. Yeah, whatever number of days we have to light inside and to hide. But the rest of the nights we'll light outside, and next year we'll do everything outside. So between all of that, there's still a lot of Pesuma Nisa. But the time of the Rishonim was varied because they saw this is not going away too fast. This is not a temporary problem. This is not because they have a festival. This has to do with their intolerance of the Jews. So that's what that was rooted in. So therefore, they instituted such a minig of lighting in the Bate Knesiyos. Now, the Gemara dealt with the different possibilities of Pesuma Nisa. The different possibilities of Pesuma Nisa. So, Tosfos, now the Gemara says, once the time that you're supposed to light, so the Loshna Gemara says, Mishet Tishka Achama, Chetichle Rego Menashuk. From either sunset, or Tishka Achama could mean Tzeitzer Kochovim, and there are varied interpretations really of the Rambam, what he means, which he means. The Gemara says, which shuk are we talking about? The shuk of the Talmudoi. The Talmudoi apparently were non-Jews, and they were in the firewood business. That was their business. So these were, now, there was no street illumination in those days. So when it was dark, it was pitch dark outside. You couldn't see your nose. So basically, as soon as it got dark, you ran home. So who were the last ones to disappear from the shuk? The last thing you needed at night when you went home was to pick up a bunch of firewood to make sure you had enough wood for your fireplace for the night if you were short. So this was the last stop people made on the way home, was in the firewood market. So the firewood dealers were the last ones to leave. After everybody, every other shopkeeper and peddler and whatever, a person in the shuk was on the way, the last thing they do is they grabbed a bunch of wood and ran home with it, you know, to keep the furnace, to keep the fireplace going overnight. So these were the last ones to leave the shuk. So the Gemara said, "Achetichle regel man ashuk," until the time when there's nobody outside. So what's the more kolzman that people are buying firewood and running from that market? Said, "Are Jews running home too? They pass, they see a menorah. After that, everybody's at home." You know, my shrezel is Angazunt. He had a neighbor, a Sapmayid. He died, I don't know, must have been 10, 15 years back now, 10 years for sure. His name was Rav Mordechai Friedman. He was a tzal. He was a sheikhet by the Satmar Rebbe. Probably circa 1930 already. And I guess Eugene Gluck, so as Angazin told me, he remembered that Eugene comes from Satma. So Ashkenazi Yid from Satma. He knew him from Satma. I remember him from Satma yet. This Yid. So he was a Yid HaShoychet. He retired about, he was 80. Earlier, he retired from Shechit. He just did Bedikas. And then he retired all. And he used to sit and learn a lot. And he was still deep into his 90s. He used to go down to the Beis HaKnesses himself, and then he needed had an aide to take him down. And he had mamish atzai fiyom, who went to shul every three times a day, you know, for shachris and for mincha and maror. When he died, his children, there was a machlekes. Nobody knew anymore whether he was 101 or he was 104. That was lost in history already, how old he was. But that was his age range. He was an old-fashioned yid. But I mean an old-fashioned Yid. He was born probably at the end of the 19th century, sometime, the Erech. And when it was dark, he slept. When it was light, he was up. You know, he went the way he grew up in his youth, that's the way he remained his whole life. In the summertime, you could hear him, you know, just in the wee hours of the morning, he was walking around in his apartment, you know, he got up. He had nothing to do with himself, he either liked to learn. And that's anyway, in the wee hours of the morning he was up. When it was dark, there wasn't a peep from his house. So that was the nature of society. So once it got dark, there was nobody outside anymore. Now the shaila is that Tosfos wants to know what happens when we it's Menicha al Shulchan Obadiah, and if we were lighting for indoors, do I still have to light Mishatishka Hama? Or I don't have to light Mishatishka Hama. So Tosfos says in one teretz I should still light Mishatishka Hama. And the second teretz, which is in fact the way to Ramo Paskins, that I don't have to light a Shkiyas HaChama anymore. That Zman is no longer relevant. So in effect, Tosa Shaila is, the din of Manichol Shechon HaVadayah, was that a new halacha altogether? Or just a new venue? But otherwise, the halacha remained the same. So Tosa in the second teretz said it's a new halacha altogether. there would be no reason to maintain the initial Zman. The initial Zman I had to do because I was being mefarsim the nes to people in the street. After Tichle Regem Rashuk, who's in the street? There's nobody outside, so what's the point? So of course you have to light that. But when you're lighting for indoors, so light when people are around. What's the difference? You have a different shuk. Your shuk is the people in your house. So light for those people. So when they're around, it's fine. The Mogen Avraham indeed says once those people go to sleep, you can't light anymore with a bracha anymore for that reason. So this is the shaila. Now in the Shulchan Aruch we find it's interesting. Rama says you don't have to light at tzeis anymore, but it's a good thing to light at the right time. So there's a very odd but difficult Biur Halacha. The Biur Halacha says the reason that you should light at the time of Tzeis HaKochavim is because it will then be visible to passers-by. The only problem is that there are more, both two places in the Torah, Mefurash, that in his time they lit Befnim Mamish, and it's also the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch in two places, meaning to say that it was no longer visible outside at all, the Rama says. We did not have that luxury. We had a light tucked away totally behind closed doors and out of sight. So the Chayra, it's a difficult, how did you learn to become Akum Tov L'Hachmer if in the Rama's time, no, they were not lighting outside at all? So the Aruch HaShulchan says Pshat, and the Chayra, that's Pashtus in the Rama, is because of the first teretz of Tosfos. That is an Inyan, according to Tosfos' first teretz, this man still remains the same as Manazem. So if you want to be Yotze Choladeus, you should light at the time of Tzeis HaKochavim. That's the best time to light. So that's Mikom Okim Toiv L'Hachmer.
According to Rama, which also the shear of oil is also probably...
No, I don't think so. Nobody, I did not find anyone yet in the contemporary, not in the classical place, let's put it that way, that argued that there's a Zman of more than half an hour. The Rif is the one that was Mechadish, there's a Zman of half an hour.
What could it be a Zman of less? Because once you did the Pearson Hanes, not by way of example in the shul, but I forgot maybe it was in the Dershim, they said that if you're lighting inside the house, you don't need the half hour.
I'm not maskim. Chvinish maskim. The pshat is, according to the Man Yoma, that it's the shiura, the pshat is, that's how long they wanted the Pirsum Manes. It's not only for people, the next guy that goes by, it's for you too. It's for the people in your house to see it a certain amount of time. The same way, like I could have passed by, it's not only that another, it should be seen for that amount of time, the Chara. That's the way I would learn. I would not think that it makes a difference if you light inside the house. I would not agree with that. So.
I'm going to ask Rav also another question.
Yeah.
The minhagim that we have, Ashkenazim, to how we light today in America, that's basically going back to Eastern Europe and what they do in Eretz Yisrael is not.
In which regard?
In regard to how in Eretz Yisrael they have those boxes that are.
I think the reason I believe is very simple. The reason is we light the Gedolei Chutz La'aretz throughout all the Doiros lit indoors, apparently, at least for hundreds and hundreds of years now. And I think the reason is, I think we just came, the Rosh HaShulchan, I think, wonders about it, why exactly it is that way. I think the reason is very simply that it's very hard to keep anticipating the winds of change in the non-Jewish world around us. And they just decided, let's just leave it inside and leave well enough alone. I mean, if I would have asked you 40 years ago, what would you say about lighting a menorah in Paris, outdoors? That's the problem. Such an enlightened, liberal city, a Western democracy, you know. And if I asked you today, what would you say about it? So we can't be sitting, you know, every year that Mr. Gdolim are going to be done to light indoors, outdoors, you know. You can't run the religion that way. They decided that the intolerance is unfortunately comes around too often to that we should not dismiss it at any point, you know. Whatever point we dismiss it, we're probably going to have to, in short order afterwards, decide to switch back the other way.
Has been to the window or not? Where does that come into play?
It's very simple. Since our principle, Bersuma Nisa, Bismaneinu, according to the Achronim, is for indoors, not for outdoors, So a meilo, you have to light it in the house in the most heavily trafficked area of the house. Now, if within the most heavily trafficked area in the house, you also have a window which faces the street, so then you get two birds with one stone. But if you have to pick between the street and the house, you pick your house. That's the ikub is manazah.
So you're doing a little street lighting at the window then?
If that is in the heavily trafficked, let's say your street window is in some den where nobody goes to.
Right, okay.
So then you don't light there at all.
Okay.
You light.
So we're still we're lighting from outside.
We are blessed in this America that we're able to light in such fashion. You know, halavai that it will always be this way.
If you saw somebody lighting it on their mantle and the window was better, and say they weren't religious, would you tell them to put it in the window?
No, whatever if they asked, I don't know. It's not, you know, that's Lieser says. The Iker is for the people inside, and that's all, you know. I wouldn't fuss about it.
So yet they made a takana, although I understand the rush was earlier, to light in the shul to be mefarsim it more. Even in his time, it wasn't necessarily only.
In the Ravosh's time, the menorah was hidden already. You couldn't.
It was already hidden.
Yes.
So in other words, so for one reason or another, they decided that they wanted to have more pirsum anes.
Yeah, and that hasn't changed. You see that we haven't rescinded it. You know, we left it with that. What's interesting is that that became a minhag in Eretz Yisrael too. That's
right.
What's interesting.
So that doesn't work.
Yeah, but that's... So apparently they held it became a minhag. Whatever the reason, it's a minhag to light in shuls now. That's apparently whatever the source was. That's what they must hold.
Is there a bira groa? I heard a paper where Shafi quoted Salvation example. There's a bira groa that... It was almost akin, I'm not sure if the growth of this, to saying halal on the night of Pesach. In other words, there's a public pirsum anes, just like halal.
Well, you have to realize, there are rishonim that learn that the inyan of halal, haidor, is a deraisa dika mitzvah.
Okay.
And it's mamash, the kiyam is a deraisa dika kiyam.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a gemara in Tainus which calls it a deraisa. I believe, right near the end of Tainus, there's such a Gemara called Halal or Deraisa de Kedin. You know, Sandra Rishon would say it doesn't exactly mean Deraisa, but it could be there are those Rishonim that learn Haidor is a Deraisa de Kedin. The Kiyam is a Deraisa de Kiyam. So, in that regard, you could easily, you know, arrive at that point. In other words, that ultimately, once the Chachamim or the Minna created the Pirsum Anes, there's a Deraisa de. If it decided this is a venue for the pirsum anes, then there's a deraisa de kikim and being mefarsim than us. That would follow from that shita and rishonim.
Does everybody hold to say a bracha in shul when they light the menorah, or I went to a minhag svarad and they didn't light it. I don't know if it was out of ignorance? Or
I don't know. As far as I know, the Chacham Tzvi said it was a rov by Sfardim, and he said the minhag is to light with a brocha. And the Beis Yosef writes that it was also a Sfardi. So I can't tell you. I don't know. I don't begin to claim even to know what all the Ashkenazim do. I was in a shul tonight, earlier, and it's a Yekesh shul, and they told me they don't light the menorah in the shul. Like, I was in shock. At the first place that he... Let's go back. Kiddush Friday night, they don't make in shul. I was floored. At a Yekish shul, not to make Kiddush.
Was it a real minhag or was it later?
No. It's back in the Ramah already. This is a real minhag. This is hundreds and hundreds. This is forever. You know, the Chassidim basically did away with it, the Litvakas. But in the Shulchan Aruch, it says to do it. It was a debate about it. It was debated if we should do it when there are no longer Orchim. But Lamaisa, the day is in the Shulchan Aruch. So in a Yekish Shul, I was floored. I don't know what happened. I have to find out what happened there. Somebody who's, you know, who tempered with them and hugged him there. I was floored. Oh. Now.
Sometimes in the Yekesh shuls, it depends where they came from, right? In other words, some of the shuls, you know, were based on the place where they originated from. I don't know
yeah,
if that
yeah.
has any effect.
Yeah. I'll call upon him. So this issue was other, it had its other effects in terms of this man for lighting. Not only that you could light later, first of all, the Magen Avraham now says that there's a new tichle regam rashuk. He says, if you hold that you can light later, because you light it for your family, he says, once your family goes to sleep, so that's the equivalent of tichle regam rashuk, and if you can't make a brocha after tichle regam rashuk, so you can't make a brocha here after the people go to sleep. So the Chemed Moshe challenged him, and he asked two kashas. He said, according to the Magen Avraham, it should be that, first of all, if you live in the midst of a non-Jewish people, you're the only Jew in town, like the Yishuv Nikkus in Eastern Europe. You know, they own the general store, and all everyone else was non-Jewish farmers. There's not another Jew in sight. So he says, you shouldn't be able to light. There's a problem with the Chemed Moshe. Then he asked the second question. He says, apparently, he says, we know that the minig is that a dor yechidi, a person that lives alone, lights. So how was he lighting, according to the Magen Avraham? There's nobody around. Now, the problem with the Chemed Moshe, which really sustains very strongly the Magen Avraham, is who was the day of the Riaz, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Riaz is a region. The Riaz says that after Tichle Regem Rashuk, you can't light anymore. That's his sheet. That's a machlekes. The Magen Mishnah brings a quote to Rashba. The Rashba says he can light the whole night. Hello, when Imara said that that meant that's the best time to light. But if he didn't light then, you could light later. But the Riyaz says he can't light after that time. And one page later in the Ram, there's another Riyaz. And lo and behold, the Riyaz says that if you live Ben Anochrim, you're supposed to light. So according to the Chemed Moshe, it's impossible to hold both of these two things simultaneously. And yet the Riyaz says both of them. That Tichler Regem Rashuk you can no longer light, and Dor Ben Anochrim does light. So, and Dor Yechidi, we know lights. So I think that the answer is to that, that Pursum and Isa, Chazal obligated us, if I had the possibility of doing Pursum and Isa, that I have to be Mepharsim the Nes. But the Shaila is, what happens to the people that don't have any possibility of Pursum and Nes? So should I leave them out of the mitzvah or include them in the mitzvah? So Chazal said, Afal Pikein, the Jews, they're included in the mitzvah. Even though they can't be Mepharsim the Nes to anyone. But if most of us have the opportunity to be Mepharsim the Nes, so then we're obligated to be Mepharsim the Nes, and it's Li Kufa. So it's L'chayra the Pshat in the Magen Avraham, but it's sustained from the Riyaz very clearly. Now from that, so it means that a person, the best time to light is really is when a person's family comes together. So let's say I'm home at Tzeis HaKochavim, but nobody else is home, it's not the time to light. Because the Rabban is not here yet, it's going to be here. So I should wait until everyone's together to light. And on the other hand, I have to be careful to light before I can't go home at 2 o'clock in the morning when everyone's sleeping and decide I want to light then. It doesn't work. So in fact, it does inform the Inyan, it doesn't form the Inyan of when we light. When we start lighting, when's the most appropriate time to light, and when's the ending time for lighting? With the Eved, one could light, listen the whole night, whatever, but one shouldn't make a brocha already if everyone went to sleep. So, Pirsum Hanes. Pirsum Hanes is to understand the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's hand in Teva, what the Rabbeinu Shel Olam does. In Purim and in Chanukah, we both celebrate the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's his hand in Teva. That Chanukah was, as the Maral wrote, was a celebration of the victory over the Greeks in the war. It was not a celebration of the Nes. The Nes is what established, the Maral says, that the war was a Nes. But the celebration of Chanukah is principally because of the Nes. You're right. It probably of the Nes of the Milchama. We celebrate the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in Teva. Even the Nes of the Menorah was to make clear to us how the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's hand is involved in a veiled sense in the world around us. And that's the notion of the Brisumani. So we focus upon the Nes to realize that that Rabbanu Shalom who sustained us, who sustained us, Bimei Antiyochus, that's the same Rabbanu Shalom that's with us in all the Dairus. Ella, the Rabbanu Shalom is B'Seser. We have to search for the Rabbanu Shalom. It's not going to come and hit us over the head. No, there's an old, fable which brings out this point. You know, a man was in a flood. And they came around and they told him he has to leave. He's going to die in the flood. The water's rising. And he said, God will help. I'm not leaving. So that's it. So they went away and they left him there. You know, later on they come, someone else comes. Comes with a boat. Now the water's rising. And he says, I'll take you out of here. And he says, no, God will save me. So he doesn't leave. So the boat goes away. The water keeps rising. It climbs up on the roof to get away from it. Finally, a helicopter comes and lets down a rope ladder. And he says, no, I'm not going. God will save me. So the helicopter gets out of there. And the floodwaters rise and wash him away, and he dies. He comes up to Shemayim, and he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, what did you do? I had absolute faith in you that you would help me, and you didn't. So Rabbeinu Shalom says, who do you think sent the policeman to you, the boatman to you, and the helicopter to you to get you out of there? Me! You know, the realization that the Rabbeinu Shalom is the one who stands, together with us. You know, if you know a person who survived the Holocaust,
what did they do?
Every person has a Megillah of a million Nisim. Mamash, a million Nisim. A million Nisim. Rabbi Kisira was a Bazan Gesund, Elter Yid. He was my Rebbe and my son's Rebbe. He was my Rebbe in ninth grade. He was my son's and my children's Rebbe in ninth grade. Spent a long time. A master mechanach. He's related how his life was saved. He was in a place where they were going to shoot him, and there was a big fence behind him. He said, and something just picked him up and threw him over the fence. And he wound up on the other side, and he ran away. But then he realized that, so he saved, he lived that day. But then being outside the concentration camp, he said, was this too dangerous to be, because if they caught him outside, they would kill him. So now we had to get back inside. But how are you going to get back inside? You think it's bad and hard enough getting out, but how are you getting in? Somehow he found a hole in the fence, and he was able to go back inside, and then the people he was with, they were shipped off to some other place for labor or whatever, and he was saved. But he said he was there, he doesn't know what happened. He said something just threw him over the fence. He wound up on the other side, a huge fence. Now, every person is a Yid, lives in Flatbush. So there's one of the Rebbeim in Taras Yaakov that spoke about it once, Tisha B'av. He says, I went into his store on a Friday, and my daughter was sick. She was in the hospital there in Queens. I had to go to Queens. So he told him, I'm rushing. My daughter's sick. He says, so this Yid tells me a Russian, I think a Russian Yid. I think a Russian Yid or a Polish Yid. And he tells him, this, you got to remember, the main thing is to be mispalo. He says, let me tell you about this. He says, well, I'm alive because of my tefillas. He says, they sent me into the gas chamber. I was in the outer room about to go in. So I decided, okay, this is the last chance that I'm going to daven before I'm going to die. So I went on the side of the room over there, whatever, and I started, and I daven shmanes, and I daven mincha. And I got so absorbed in davening mincha, when I finished davening mincha, there was nobody left there. They all went in the gas chamber, they were all killed. I was just left in that room by myself, the outside room. So the German guard saw me. He says, what are you doing over here? Why don't you go with everybody else? He says, get out of here. We'll kill you tomorrow. He says, that was the last day that the gas chamber there functioned. Tomorrow, whatever it was, whatever happened, the allies came or whatever, this is the last day it functioned. He says, because of that mincha saved my life. The realization of the revolutionary presence with us, wherever we go and whatever we do, that's the Yisoid. I sat once with Avram Chobzitz, of Henoch Shver. He started off in Radin at the beginning of the war. And when the Russians came, he had a shayla if he should, what he should do, should he run away? Because he knew if he's a Rav, he's going to get arrested if he stayed put. So he did the girl a groan, and it said that he should stay put. That's what he understood. So he stayed put. They arrested him, and they're going to send him to Siberia with his wife. Then his children, they didn't want to arrest. They could leave his children behind if they want. So he didn't know what to do. So he made the girl, and his relative said, what are you taking them with you? He did the girl a groan again and again, and it gave him a siman that he should take them with him. He shouldn't leave them here. So he took his children with him. They were sent by train. They were going east in Russia, and they reached, Samarkand in Asiatic Russia. And then the Germans attacked. So he just escaped from the Germans because they sent him, 2,000 miles to the east. And when they decided they need the trains to go bring the supplies to the front. So they threw all the people off wherever they were. They threw them off the train. And the trains turned around and went back in the other direction. And he survived the war there in Asiatic Russia with his four children. They all survived the war. So he talked about it once I was there. And he says, the Rabbeinu Shalom held me by the hand at every step that I took during the war. And he said also, I remember, you see the Ashgacha Pratis. His city, Radin, was in Poland, but it was claimed by Russia. That Russia said historically it's part of Russia. So he was, the secret police were interviewing him wherever he wound up in Russia. So they asked him where he comes from. So he said he comes from Radin. So the guy never heard Radin was such a hick town. The guy from the secret police never heard of Radin. So we start saying to him, where is that place? Where is it? So an officer was passing by and heard this exchange. So he started screaming at the interviewer, don't you know Radom is one of the biggest cities in Poland? He never heard of Radin. So he thought he said Radom. Radom was one of the large, like the four biggest cities in Poland. So they wrote down that he's a Polish citizen. He comes from Radom. That's the reason he was able, ultimately, he was kicked out of, he was able to leave Russia later. Because when Poland joined to fight, to form the government in exile, to fight together with Russia, so they freed all the Polish citizens. So he was able to get repatriated and leave the Soviet Union. So the Ashgacha Pratis, that's the Indian, each person has, there are people in great events, in extreme situations, who see Ashgacha Pratis in a very pronounced level, and we see it in subtler ways, in day-to-day life. But the Rabbeinu Shalom stands with us. We meet the right person in the right place at the right time. Who, what, when, where, why, who knows? The Rabbeinu Shalom has his cheshbon. And just the other night, I went to a chasana. When was it? Last week, I went to a chasana. Chasana, I meet a mechanach that I know for many, many years, comes over to me and he says, you called me once to ask me about this person. It's a chinuch institution for them. So what became of them? So it reminded me that when I was, this mechanach used to live in New York. He doesn't live in New York anymore. So I had to track him down to get a hold of him. I wanted to ask his advice because I knew that he would be knowledgeable about an appropriate institution, a chinuch institution for a certain person. So one day, the Rebbetzin calls me at lunchtime, and she says, listen, do me a favor. We need to drop something over to Chaim Eli's house. I said, okay, I'll take care of it. I'll run over. I'll bring it then. So I pull up outside Chaim Eli's house in the corner of 147th and 76th. I get out of the car. Right in front of me, who's getting out of the car? This Mechana from out of New York. Had a reason he had to come to Chavetz Chaim that day. So there I met him. I haven't met him before in Queens. I haven't met him since in Queens. Then when I needed him, the Rabbeinu Shalom brought me up to the same corner together with him to meet him. That's the way the Rabbeinu Shalom, that's the world. That's Hanukkah, is to take that into account, the Yad Hashem and everything. And to realize, from that what we need is the joy, inspiration to serve the Rabbeinu Shalom. If we dedicate ourselves to the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah, we'll have the Siyata Dishmaya to survive this Golus. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. Who, what, when, where, how, who knows? But we'll have the Siyata Dishmaya to survive this Golus. So that's the message of Hanukkah. The Rabbeinu Shalom stands with us. It can be dark outside, a whole world of darkness. But ma'at min aur is doicha harbe min ha'ishach. Afreid lecha chanak.
That was Hanukkah.